for me as a practitioner, like being connected to the team has been the key, because then it like metabolizes those intense or sometimes scary or painful feelings that pass through.
You're listening to Conscious Mind.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. I'm Molly Norton, and today I am joined by Dr. Michael Huff. He is a psychiatrist here at Silver Hill Hospital, works in our admissions department and our intensive outpatient program. Welcome, Dr. Huff.
Thanks so much.
It's a pleasure to have you here today. So if you've listened to the show before, we stray and we go to a variety of subjects. It's never the same show every time. And I think it's always helpful to have a bit of a warm-up question for folks when they join us. So a common one that we ask is, what was the most interesting thing you learned in medical school? If you go back to when you were in school, something that really stands out for you when you think back, like, oh, that, you know, that one thing that professor said that really stuck with me, or something along those lines.
What first comes back is the very first year we do all this dissection, and that's very far out and strange. I don't use that day to day in my work, but that was, you know, a unique experience.
Do you actually dissect, obviously, animals, right? But also human?
No, right.
Human anatomy.
Yeah.
Wow. That's
so that, because, you know, a lot of people are going into surgery or different things, and they want us to understand, you know, truly, what is this stuff that we're talking about? When someone has an injury here, what are the mechanics or in this organ? And of course, some of that's relevant in psychiatry with our medications and so on, but we end up going different places.
Yes.
But yeah, when I think back, that was the first thing that came to mind.
You were like, wow, this is wild.
Yeah. And it's like one of the first things you do passing through the door. It's so very strange.
Does it scare some people off?
I imagine it does. It is like kind of stunning and weird. And yeah, I can picture just the place and all the sensory stuff so vividly. But it also bonds people together, I think, that here we are. What is this? Why are we doing this?
And did you know at that point that you wanted to go into psychiatry specifically, or was that something you learned along the way?
I did. Even when I started like pre-med, I was targeting psychiatry. I was open to finding something else interesting. I grew up around medicine. My dad's a lung doctor. My mom was an OB-GYN.
So there's something about, you know, witnessing your parents as doctors that inspires.
Yeah. For a long time, that pushed me away from it. But then kind of as I was growing up a little bit, that did inspire. And I thought, oh, there's something pretty cool about the way they spend their time. All to say, yeah, I was open to finding some other avenue, but was pretty sure, and then turned out to be right, that psychiatry was where I would land.
So you feel like you landed in the right place?
Definitely. I guess it's a question that everyone encounters at different times, professionally or in whatever setting. You know, who am I in this space? And I certainly have that here. But I do think it's complicated in psychiatry, because often our patients are struggling to figure out who they are, or to have like sort of authentic interactions, and maybe have had not very therapeutic interactions with doctors or people that they need help from. So then, yeah, it does feel complicated of how do I be a real person here and the person that my patient needs me to be, which is me.
Right.
And also makes space for keeping things to myself.
There's the person that you are, and then there's like personas, and there's how we present ourselves in different environments with different people in our life. But like at the core, are we still us? So we can kind of be a different version of ourselves for other people, especially when it comes to psychiatry and sitting with a patient. Like, you know, patient A may need a different Molly today than they had last week because of whatever's going on in their life.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes maybe you need to be representative of a parental figure or a father figure, whatever it is. And I think understanding the value in that and being able to do that skillfully makes a good clinician, for sure.
Yeah, totally. and there's people who have all different kinds of models of trying to trace how that happens or what someone should or shouldn't be doing. And then there's what like just automatically happens. We have our moments too, or days, or even just getting, you know, what do I do when I'm hangry or something, yeah. You know? So
I'm really hungry and I have to sit with this person for an hour.
Right.
How am I going to maintain my cool?
Exactly. Yeah. And I tend to try and bring it in. If I really can't get past it, then I'll just tell them, like, you know what?
I'm really hungry.
Yeah, I'm like hungry. So if I'm more irritable than usual, and that usually helps.
I think, but that's like authenticity, which is really cool, is like being able to just be human in the therapeutic interaction, because, you know, there's a lot of schools of thought where you should be this blank slate where you have, you know, it's the Freudian couch, like, you want the person to reflect off of you and be a very neutral subject. But to me, that feels inauthentic.
Mm.
And I think there is, and we've talked about this a lot on the show, is I think there's such a value in authentic human connection, especially in therapy, like being able to be real with each other, that I highly doubt your patient walked away from that interaction feeling like, oh, Dr. Huff was like talking about himself and doesn't care about me, right?
You never know. And I mean, there's times that I think I get the balance right and times I don't. And then, yeah, however it lands for that person too. So it's, I don't know, it can be fun. It can also be a rabbit hole of like distraction or like get really like over-intellectualized.
Yeah, I'm also thinking about as the patient, right? How do I project who I am to my therapist?
Mm.
How do I talk about myself and what's going on with me and have that person understand me when there's so many variables happening in that exact interaction? Like,
totally.
I've been in therapy myself before. I think it's good for any clinician to be in therapy, and I find it very uncomfortable talking about myself.
Sure.
And I think, gosh, what does this person think about me?
Totally.
I'm trying to project this version of myself. I mean, I'm trying to be authentic, of course, because I'm there to get help, but you can really get in your own head when you're the patient.
Right. Yeah, I agree that it's super helpful to experience therapy or group therapy or whatever kinds of things that we're going on to provide for other people, so that then we can try and remember, like, oh yeah, all kinds of weird things pass through our mind or our feelings as we're approaching that experience.
And I think for me, at least, having a therapist who engages easily and can be human and not be a complete blank slate in that situation helps.
Because
if I feel like it's just me talking, and I'm not getting any sort of feedback or any sort of like feel like there's a relationship of some sort happening that's not just completely one-sided.
Yeah. It's pretty stressful.
It's stressful.
Yeah. Which I think is part of the idea. I don't know.
Right. Is it supposed to be? Is therapy supposed to be stressful?
In some ways, yeah. I think, you know, people talk about it being like optimally stressful. Mm-hmm. So like enough stress to change, but not so much stress that we like are overwhelmed or shut down. But I'm with you that I like it to be a certain kind of stress that I feel like I'm with another person through it.
So speaking of stressful situations, working in admissions is quite a stressful situation at times. You know, you're seeing people at some of their darkest moments coming into a psychiatric hospital. How have you found that experience, and what have you found to be helpful for our patients in those moments?
Yeah, it's true that when any of us show up in a crisis to a setting like that, then as a patient, then we are usually there because things aren't working inside or out or both, trying to meet that person where they're at and accomplish some very technical tasks and some information gathering, but also be somewhat therapeutic. It is a unique encounter. For me as a practitioner, like being connected to the team has been the key, because then it like metabolizes those intense or sometimes scary or painful feelings that pass through either in the patient or that we can experience. Being connected to each other so that we know we have each other's back, so that we can, you know, laugh, so we can take care of each other. goes a long way.
Yeah, the team approach is essential. I think in many of the programs here that we have a sometimes multidisciplinary team that works together to help our patients, and that no one practitioner is alone in that experience. And again, I think that takes us back to the theme of this program, this show, is like the human connection piece and how our colleagues are just essential to what we do and that social relationship and, you know, being able to weather the really tough storms together and talk through encounters that maybe didn't go exactly right or how can we do better as a team. I don't think any of us could do it without that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It reminds me of the conversation we were just having about therapeutic stances, where if we're not getting that feedback that says, hey, I'm human too, hey, I'm in this with you, if we get that same blankness from our team, then yeah, it's scary. We feel alone.
So, mixture of human capacity and limitation. Tell me what you mean, and we'll just try to talk through this and see what we can find.
Yeah. When you asked about what things interest me about people or about
what interests you most about humans,
then somehow this came to my mind, this like mixture of all these like sophisticated and complicated things we do every day, and also how nevertheless, of course, we have blind spots and that there's things that we miss. One thing that people learn in medical school is how much we know with a lot of confidence about some things. You know, they'll teach us about the very gene and the very sort of micro protein, you know, effects of some certain processes, and how little we know about other things. And I can't speak generally about it. I think there's like things about luck or people's interests or just the state of science. But it is impressive how much we don't know, even as we learn all those details.
Right. And will we ever is the question. And maybe that's just the great mystery that serves us in some way. And we don't need to necessarily know. So, Michael, one thing I noticed about you is you seem to be a very observant person. On the, you know, quieter side, observant, aware of what's going on around you. Tell me a little bit about that. So like your kind of observant side and how that serves you in the work that you do.
That's interesting. I do try and be prepared to like not know what can or should happen. There are models of how people feel unwell or get to feeling more well. But I think among those models that I find interesting is an openness to the moment and not knowing, which can be connected to like a feeling of playfulness or like spontaneity.
Well, I think what you're doing is working. I think you are a great doctor, and
thanks,
we're lucky to have you here. And I've had such a blast talking to you about all of these subjects. I feel like we could talk for a lot longer.
Yeah.
Thank you again, and you're welcome back here anytime. We'll continue the conversation.
Thanks, Molly. Real pleasure.
You've been listening to Conscious Mind on Silver Hill Radio.
No, don't worry. I can cut all this stuff out.
Okay.